Okay, this is board time, Wednesday, July 1st at 1:32.
Okay, welcome, welcome. Chris, you're here, and Mark, you can kind of guide us as to minimize the staff having to wait for us to do other things. Which item we ought to handle first, so that we can untie up staff.
Okay, I would say 1.3 and 1.4, Chris Horn can help us with. Pam Mason from Real Property Services and Public Works can help us with 1.5.
Okay.
And I would suggest to the board that item 2.1 be pulled by the advice of our Chief Civil Deputy Chris Horn.
Thank you.
That should go to a public hearing.
Thank you.
Okay.
And we will do a notice of public hearing and get that scheduled.
Okay.
So well, that didn't have to be done in the public hearing.
Yeah, I'll turn it over.
A public hearing of any sort.
Well, what happened is, if you look at the ordinance that we originally passed, we gave 10 days notice under 3632. It's actually 120, and it calls for 10 days notice. And you, because you're enacting your police power authority, my view is that when you alter that ordinance, that you mm-hmm. should follow the same process that you followed when you originally passed it, because it affects the fees that people pay or don't pay. And so for that reason, I'm recommending that you give notice and go through a public hearing process just because we did that when we originally enacted it.
So this is June. When does that sunset? What's the date of sunset?
What the statute says is that if you haven't acted upon the study by resolution, if the resolution of reaffirmation or the study mm-hmm. is not done within 30 days that of when the study was called for, it shall sunset. So I think August 7th is the correct date, because the ordinance was originally okay. passed July 8th.
So we have about a month.
Yeah, a little less, right around a month.
Yeah, okay. Well, that was my concern.
I think it's a very good concern.
Okay.
It was either that or go back and address the whole issue.
Again, which we don't want to
again,
do.
I would love to do.
Oh.
So the plan is to put that on the hearing agenda at the earliest convenience
earliest
to satisfy those
date.
Needs.
We'll notify, I'll work with Rebecca today and we'll
okay.
get that.
Yeah. Very good. And between the other projects, which one is the 1.3, 1.4, or 1.5? Which one's the fastest one, Mark?
well, we could.
Those are mine.
We can get Pam on her way if we talk about 1.5, the Dolly Building, whatever discussion Councilor Mielke wanted to have.
Oh, okay. I do. We've got the reports back, and it's back before this board as to do the recommendation and or have this board authorize it to go on the sale block.
Declare it surplus.
Are we talking Dolly Building?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So and we're doing 1.5. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. My recommendation is that we move forward with it, because it's a slow process. We would put out, we have a real estate person we use, or use our own real estate person?
We work with other outside.
Oh, yeah, okay.
We put the process.
Okay. And more importantly is that we have our values in on it. We know about what we should be getting. And so that's what my recommendation to the board is. So I'm going to put that in the form of a motion that we list this as excess property and list it.
Okay. Is that the right motion in order to move forward to the next logical step?
Do they need a formal vote or just give guidance to staff to bring it to consent?
Well, they do have to declare. The board has to declare, or the council has to declare the property surplus.
But they will do that in a consent hearing as a result of a staff report that comes to them.
Certainly, that would be the traditional way that you do it, yeah.
Right. Okay. So it sounds as though we have board approval to take that direction.
Okay. Yeah. Here's a copy of our ordinance recognizing best use of funds. And
I think, thank you. I think what we have not done is get, this is a sizable building at an important location. And I would think that what I would like to see, and I don't know if this has been ever been done in the past, is a letter from you recommending we take this action based on the fact that we don't see this in our purpose for needed expansion, all the things that we've kind of casually talked about but aren't really put together in a single document, ensuring that this is a well thought through, we've kind of piecemealed it is how I feel. So we have evaluation and we have a copy of an appraisal, but and we've talked about it. I think I asked you verbally last week, would we ever foresee needing this property for anything? And you outlined that this building that we're in still has adequate space and will in the foreseeable future, and so that we're actually setting up the case for selling it. And I would hope that we would do that for any sizable. Now, sometimes we do these little slivers that are next to somebody's property, and mm-hmm. we sell them. Those don't need a complete report on those.
We started on this over a year ago, and we went back and.
I'm not saying it's
report.
A bad idea.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that for us to act, all the reasons why we've come to this mm-hmm. conclusion, if they could be put together in one document,
right.
then when we go to public hearing, we have a consolidated copy of what all these solid reasons are for us to...
Right. The rationale for declaring it surplus would be contained in the staff report that would come to the board. Mm-hmm. And every rationale for disposing of the building would be contained in there, so would some sort of financial analysis. What is the rent used for that we collect on the building?
Is important.
What would we do with the proceeds upon sale? All of that.
Okay, and maybe I misunderstood. Are we saying bring it forward into a public hearing for us to make a decision on then?
Yes.
Or are we saying we're agreeing here that we're going to sell it?
No, I made the motion that we sell it. We've already done a year-long study and evaluation of it, and I'm not quite sure what you're talking about. If you go back to staff on each piece of property that we're looking at, what happens if staff disagrees?
No, I don't. Staff does. Well, this staff gets a say so, but.
Can I bring a little clarification here?
Yeah.
We don't have the authority just simply to sell it at this point. What we do have is to take the next step, which is to bring it to a public meeting out there that declares it, where we vote whether or not to declare it surplus, and with that will come the staff report for us to be able to base that judgment.
So
that's what you're
talking about, legal staff.
It is two steps. It should be.
It's to bring it to that decision to a public hearing, and then at that point we'll deliberate on it.
Yes, but to. Well, but Tom is saying he's made the decision that it should be sold.
We've worked on it for a year.
Okay.
We've done the study. We've had it done externally. We've had it
so
done
where
internally.
Is the report that you got? If I could just get a
you,
copy
you,
of the report
you did
you
get
got.
A copy of that.
No, no.
I believe
I don't mean this. These are different documents.
I think I gave them to you last week. We gave you copies out.
Yeah, that was a result of a contract with a consulting agency to help.
Yes, that's part of a package.
Right.
What I don't have is a document that puts the package together.
There is not one.
I see.
What we have had have been isolated discussions.
Yes.
Regarding the building, and and I know that there's interest on the part of the board to dispose of the building.
It appears it's likely a prudent decision.
Right.
But
so the board has got to approve this declared surplus, and it ought to occur in a consent hearing, and all the facts that we have on this building would be presented to the board at that time.
I don't think it has to go to a consent hearing, so I'm asking my legal staff.
Okay, well, the statute that talks about the surplus property is 2.33A. It's of the county code.
We all have a copy of that. Mm-hmm.
And it says, when in the opinion of the property manager, any county real or personal property is surplus to the needs of the county, the manager shall so advise the board, making appropriate recommendations for its possible use, sale, lease, or other disposition. He's supposed to consult the property management committee and the officer department last using the property before so advising, and then they talk about potential uses. And then if the board concludes after that's all done that the property is surplus to the foreseeable needs of the county, the board may authorize the sale or other disposition of the property provided in the chapter. So it contemplates some report provided by the county manager that talks about what he's reviewed, who he's contacted, and his ultimate opinion on the property. So presumably those things, I don't know what, because you've seen talking about reports, I haven't seen them, so they may be Mr. McCauley's report, I just don't know. And so that's just what the statute says. So.
And that's basically what I'm asking for, because that will wrap it up.
And that can be done as a part of his, that kind of report could be part of his staff report. So I don't know what's been done, but if it hasn't been, it's required.
Chris, pardon me, could you also clarify paragraph 3.2B9 of the charter?
That talks about your obligation to manage property.
It says manage properties owned by the county.
That's correct. Once we own, once the county owns property, you're obligated to manage those properties.
But it still takes board approval to declare surplus and sell.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. So you're going to put together a staff report with the parameters. Yeah. If you can include on that staff report the total amount of maintenance that we've spent over how long we've had the property.
Well, that's in one of the reports.
Like, well, 16 years of maintenance figures. That
okay, well, some reasonable amount so that we have...
Maybe annual.
Yeah, well, we do have an annual. It's about $82,000 a year or something like that. So, okay, that's good enough. But I would like to know also what the potential of property tax revenue would be, because right now, because the county owns it, nobody's paying property taxes, right? Oh, we have that. What?
I still haven't had my lunch yet. 12.84%.
Okay.
Leasehold excise taxes.
Okay. So that's supposed to be about the equivalent of what it would have been?
No.
No.
No,
okay.
It's a fraction of the property tax amount.
Okay. When this staff report comes forward, can you show those numbers, the comparison?
Right. We can compare net revenue, which would be rents minus the costs.
Yeah.
What county realizes as a result of owning the building,
yeah.
And we can compare that to what the property tax revenue would be,
yeah.
If it was privately owned.
Great, and if you could break those down so we can see those line items, that would be great.
Okay,
thank you.
And I think another aspect of this report would be any revenue currently from that building, how that's been dispersed, and what, just as a heads up to what we'll need to be working on for the future.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. How did we pay for that building? Was there debt involved?
We paid about $2 million for it, and it was in the mid to late 90s, I believe.
I don't know. I remember it used to be Clarko Credit Union, and then I can't remember how the county owned it or actually acquired it, to be honest.
Okay. Yeah, if there was debt on it, it was liquidated sometime
ago. So it's owned free and clear at this point?
It is, yeah.
So if you can include also in the report the equivalent cost of that money, if we were to just simply have that money, if we were paying interest for that money, or if the bank was, or if we were earning interest on that money, the cost of the money tied up in that building.
Okay. But essentially, that's the investment pool rate, because if we had the cash, we'd give it to John Payne. He'd put it in the investment pool. So it's like 1.25%, not a lot.
So we're making a profit.
We are.
Considering that the building's paid for.
We are.
Well, considering the building's paid for is what I mean to say, is that the cost, that money is not earning interest somewhere else.
Yeah, we're making many times renting it out what we would make if we had cash in the investment pool.
What do you mean by that?
Well, if you take the net revenue from the building, and it's like $180,000 a year, divided by the cost of the building, which is roughly $2 million, we're earning 8%. If you take the cash from the building and put it, if we sold it, or the cash that we paid for the building and put it in the bank, we'd be earning $2,000.
Rather than talk about the actual numbers and specifics, I'm just looking to see that we want to account for the various potential revenues and expenses associated with that building, so that when it comes forward, we'll be able to contrast that. Okay, great.
Well, that's the second question, what it is. The question we're talking about right now is, does it warrant as excess property? And if it does, then I believe it does, and we've gone all through this for the last year, and I didn't get my answer, didn't understand the answer. Does it have to go on the hearing agenda?
It does not. The county code does not speak to a public hearing, but it does require the report before you can vote on declaring it surplus. So you have to receive a report from the county manager before you can declare it surplus. So that's a precondition. So if you haven't gotten it from him.
Well, I would think that after the work that we've done, you just have to recap the information.
That exactly right.
Okay. So if this was to go on the consent agenda at the next convenient time, that automatically provides for the staff report that gives all of that, that satisfy all that information. That gives us the ability to be able to make an informed decision and during that time to be able to vote yes or no on declaring it surplus.
Yes.
Great.
So clearly.
So, yes, ma'am.
Clearly, that's my whole point.
Mm-hmm. And that will be provided. That's part of the reason that comes to the consent agenda for us to be able to talk about the merits of that. Right. So is your motion, Tom?
No, I think what we're doing is duplicating what we've already done. Mark has been involved. In fact, he was involved in getting this information for us. The only thing you don't have from Mark is a yes or a no. Well, all the information has already been provided by Mark.
So let me ask you this. Is your motion to have this staff report created and for this to be put on the consent agenda to call it surplus?
Yes.
Okay. Is there a second? I'll second that. Any more discussion?
Well, we don't have the document in front of us that's required under code for us to declare it surplus.
We could do that when we bring it back to the board.
That's what the process is. That's what the motion is.
We have to do one and then do the other.
So if this motion passes, you will receive a staff report with all the information that we've talked about.
I get that, but the point I've been trying to make is being bypassed. I'm not saying anything is going to change, Tom. I'm saying that all of the information needs to come forward in a document from the county manager with his recommendation to us.
Yeah.
And it may have been a year long, and it appears that we have pretty much all the information that we're going to need here. But there's a legal step that I want to see done. And that is where it tells us what we need to have in front of us before we say we're going to surplus it.
That's what that report is, correct? Mm-hmm. So this sets in motion the necessary step that we'll get a copy of that staff report with all that information before that agenda, like we normally do. We'll be able to have the time to talk about it, one-on-ones, do any more further background conversations, and then when that consent agenda item comes up, we'll have that, we'll have the extra research that we have done ahead of that meeting, and then be able to deliberate and make that choice then.
Yeah. Again, Mark is the one that had gone out and gotten the reports. So they came from Mark.
understand all that.
Yeah, okay.
So, will you allow me to make a motion?
We already have a motion.
And to see if it's... Okay.
But there's plenty of time for discussion.
I'm saying that when you say that we are putting it forward with an intent to surplus it, it's that statement that we intend ahead of the report to surplus it. That's the part I object to, even though that's the outcome that
it should
be
to consider surplusing.
Right.
To consider surplusing, exactly. Because we can't reach that conclusion legally until we have followed the code.
Can I clarify your motion for the minutes?
Yeah.
You move to have the necessary staff report created with the recommendation, and to bring this forth into a consent agenda for us to consider surplusing it. Is that a good, accurate description of your current motion?
Well, when you say consider.
Yeah, in the public hearing, in the consent agenda.
It makes it sound like another action, a step. You're adding a step in between.
That would be the consent item.
And that was my motion was not to go to a consent calendar. Legal staff says we don't have to go to consent calendar. We could do that in any public setting.
No, what he said was you don't need a public hearing on it, but it should be a consent item.
Well,
no, you didn't say that.
I didn't say that. What
you
I
didn't?
No, but what I did say
you almost
is
almost told me lunch back.
But what I did say is you can't vote on it until you've gotten a report from the county manager.
Okay.
And so, and who has to have consulted with other groups that the statute requires. So he has some preconditions before he can write his report, and you have that precondition before you can vote on it. So you can't take action on the vote until he's written the report. He
right.
can't finish writing the report until he makes the consultations with the group that the code or requires him to contact. And you can start the process in place by asking him to do the evaluation and prepare a report, and requesting as soon as he's completed that to put it on consent, and you can do that today. That much of it you can ask him to do, and he can begin that process with the understanding it'll come back to you in some forum, typically consent, and you will vote on it, and mm-hmm. depending on the result of that, you will either vote affirmative or negative based on the results in your judgment.
I don't want to be held to the point of saying it has to come back to consent.
That's because a judgment for the board.
And that's what, I want to say, when we get that report, and whichever public hearing happens first, we could take action on it.
Well, I think you need a public meeting.
Yes.
Okay. There's a difference.
It could happen at a board meeting, a regular hearing, or whatever. I just, all these steps along the way, we're over a year into this already. And the process we're complicating more so than what it needs to be. Now I agree with what you said. We have to wait for Mark to come back with a summary of what he's collected and his recommendation. But we can still make the motion that's before us now, which won't happen until Mark comes back. We will set the date after we get Mark's report.
Just like all the other consent agenda items, they consist of a report and a potential action, and then we consider the report during that consent item handling, and then we make a decision, a vote on it. This includes both of those. It includes the report, and it gives us the opportunity to deliberate and to vote on that report. And that's the simplest, most straightforward way to proceed on this if you want to be able to potentially consider surplusing this property. So, Chris, you just outlined a process. Is that your motion?
No, because I don't want to be held to consent agenda.
Okay.
Just consent.
Then,
so
how would you like to proceed?
That the motion be be made that we recognize this as possible excess property, and we would have to get the report from our manager before we went any farther. After he gives us that report, we could set a date or take it to a public hearing for action.
Okay, I think that's a different motion, so I'm going to withdraw my
second.
Because I'd like to be able to move forward in a way that's the next orderly step for us to be able to get the report and consider that yes or no action
okay.
in a public meeting. So if you want, so...
No, another couple of months doesn't matter.
No, I'm not talking about delaying it. I'm thinking that this could come forward on the I don't know how long it would take you to create a report, maybe a week, and bring it forth on the agenda. 2 weeks, whatever it is.
That's my point. His report doesn't have to come back on the agenda.
I would urge that if we intend to dispose of a property that's worth at least $2 million, that we put it on a consent agenda and do just as Mr. Medor said, follow this legal process and put it on a consent, and we can discuss it, and it takes no time at all, because by the time we get a report from the property manager and the authority, especially after all this discussion all this time about the usefulness of that building to us, there's no reason not to take it on a consent agenda. It's a big asset, and I think it should be on the formal record as a consent item.
Okay, so since the second has been withdrawn, somebody want to make a motion?
I make a motion that we request the county manager to prepare a report as per, what is the code number?
Clark County Code 2.33A, and I believe it's 120. I'll just confirm. 120.
According to the code reference given by our legal counsel, that Mr. McCauley prepare that report, and that be his report be and recommendation be moved forward to the earliest possible regular Clark County Board of Commissioners meeting on a consent agenda.
For the Dolly Building.
For the Dolly Building.
So you want his report property. His report to come back to a consent
his
agenda.
His report and recommendation.
And
yes.
Then after that it comes back to the consent agenda to put it as excess property to be eliminated.
Well, his report is going to ask us to take action to surplus it.
Yeah. When are you going to take the action?
On that consent.
Perhaps on the consent.
On that consent item?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That day. Mm-hmm. Well, it's the same thing I said, I think.
Okay. Well is that a second? You want to second that motion?
No.
No?
You can second.
All right, I'll second it. Any more discussion?
No.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
No. Did you say no?
No.
Okay, all right, motion passes.
And with that, Pam Mason, thank you.
Wait.
Does that wrap up 1.5 for you, Tom?
Yeah, that'll wrap that up.
Okay.
I'm going to hand out to you the other piece at Paradise Point.
Well, before we move into that, Tom, we've got 1.3 and
it's not here.
What's that?
Paradise Point is not here.
Well, we can add it later. I just want to make sure that
no, we're not taking action on it. I want you guys to see it and read it where it says to access it and sell it.
Okay.
Okay?
All right. Thank you.
Who wrote this?
I don't think this is the purchase agreement on the property when we got it.
This is 1.5? The Dolly Building?
No.
Oh, a different one. Okay, so we'll come back to this.
That's for your information to do your homework and come back
okay.
next week or when I'm back here.
Okay. Okay, great. So we have 1.3 and 1.4 to cover, right?
Right. Okay, Penny, you're free to go.
Okay.
Thank you.
So thank you very much.
You would have to do the same on this other piece of property.
Yes.
Also, so I'm going to give that to you.
Okay, Chris, you're here for 1.3.
I want to have a discussion before any reports are written to sell that property.
That process is that he reviews it and gives his report. You don't have to agree with it.
I want to have a discussion of that importance on a record.
Okay, Chris, you're here for 1.3 and 1.4?
I'm certainly willing to talk about them. I'm prepared for 1.4, and I'm not sure what 1.3 is because I wasn't part of the original discussion, so I don't know what the continued discussion
okay,
is.
I think a quick summary of that is that Councillor Mielke, in looking at the charter and the powers bestowed upon the chair when the chair is elected countywide, I think Councillor Mielke is interested in bestowing those powers on the chair now. Is that?
No, it's a gray area that wasn't mentioned. And what we wanted was what we had before in policy was the authority to fill vacated positions.
We're talking about this one.
Oh, the chair. Well, those are the powers of the chair to recognize now. Cause one of the things that became very obvious at this time of year is that we're given mixed messages to our newspapers. And one of the things under the charter says that the spokesman for the Board of County Councilors is the chair. And the chair speaks, whether he agrees or not, he speaks out with the decision of the majority of the board to the press. So that the press has the answer as to what the majority of the board has settled on. And right now we don't have that. I know that we talked one time before, and you said, well, it doesn't matter because the chair isn't elected. And my argument is, yes, he is. He's elected countywide because both of us were elected countywide, and we appointed him as chair. Not the same scenario under the charter, but he is represented and elected countywide, so I thought we could be able to do this.
Okay. I think I understand your question, and so let me restate it just so that, restate the facts and then state your question so I'm answering the correct question. Your point is, even though the current chair is not a chair for the purposes of the charter because he's not nominated and elected countywide, he is elected countywide, and because two or three of you nominated and elected him as the current chair, you're requesting or you're asking the question whether or not the existing board can convey on him the same powers as the charter conveys by a vote that is taken in an open public meeting. Is that a fair restatement?
That's correct.
Okay. I believe unless the powers, it would be helpful if we include what those powers would be. If you're only saying the powers provided in the charter, if they're exactly the same as the ones provided in the charter, then I believe the board could nominate or could vote to give the chair the same powers that are provided in the charter by vote. It really should happen as a result of amendment of your rules of procedure, because that's how you say you're going to do business. And so really what you're doing is amending your rules of procedure. And yes, I believe you can do that. The only question is what process are you going to go through to amend your rules of procedure? And I don't know if there's a specific process required to amend your rules, but I'll take a look real quickly.
So, my intent was to adopt the rule as the charter states it. So that helps you there.
Mm-hmm.
And under the rules and procedures of the board before, we would discuss it and agree to it here at board time, and Mr. Barron would go print it out.
I'm just looking at the rules of procedure for you real quickly.
Did you find them?
It might not be in there. It was just something we made up and handed out to the board members. Is that what you have right there, Axel?
No, this is the. I was just reading back over what the charter spells out for the chair.
I know I have that somewhere.
It's right
somewhere
here.
Else. Oh, you got it right there.
Here it is, rules of practice. So with,
this is the charter. No, I'm not talking about the charter. We have a rules and procedures.
Existing.
Yeah, I'm so looking at it right now, Councilor.
I'm asking yeah. for it to be the same. Our rules and procedures. I'll have to go get you a copy.
Amendments to these rules may be initiated by any commissioner. Any proposed amendment to these rules shall be distributed to each board member at least 5 days before the meeting at which it is to be presented. Amendments to these rules may be adopted only by a majority vote of the Board of Commissioners. That's rule number 19.
Mr. iPad Wizard.
Did you want me to...
No, I see it. It's D. So there's a same thing. There's a process that we'll have to go through. We have to give notice, and then you can take a vote on it. But the question you asked me was whether that's a possibility, and the answer is yes. It just can't be done until you've written up the amendment and you've distributed it to each board member in 5 days in advance of the date that it's going to be presented or considered. And then if it's adopted by a majority, then it passes.
Yeah, so it's fair to say you were not a charter fan. So
I'm trying to adopt a charter.
No, you're not.
He's trying to advance an aspect of it and make it effective earlier than it otherwise would be.
And what I can't figure out is why this is important to do. To advance that aspect.
Well, one, as I said before, and one of the arguments was that it's important that the chair gives the message as the board decides whether
it
agrees or not.
We're not going to take every issue we talk about in here and ask the chair to go to the Columbian and say two or three people. So. I think we're talking about any official position that's taken.
True. That also.
And where it's voted on in an appropriate meeting, like a public meeting.
Here.
Well, anywhere. It should be anywhere. The rule will be if we have an official position on anything.
Well, we also get phone calls from the TV stations.
Yeah.
And whatnot. And I know that many times they will ask to talk to me.
Yeah.
It'd be great if I turned around and said, well, let me talk to the, have you talk to the spokesman for the Board of Commissioners. He will tell you what the board is on the issue. And he tells what the board's decision is. It wouldn't be up to me.
So?
Yeah, I could give my opinion. But, you know, in that fashion, but not necessarily. See, I just...
Has anyone of the three of us, I can assure you I have never stated what the board's position is on anything. If I ever talk to anybody, I give what my position is on something. So is that something we have going on that we're trying to get a lid on?
When the radio station or TV station contacts me on the phone, I always give... the board's position, and if mine is different, I'll probably tell them why mine is different.
Well, how do you even know if other people's opinion is different?
Because you probably voted on it. If we take a vote in here on something, that is the opinion of the board.
Yeah. So.
So if I didn't agree with the two of you, that's still a majority of the board's decision.
But. It would never preclude you from offering your opinion, and if they called you, maybe they want your opinion. So
true, and I can give that to them, but the board's position is this.
Since November, have we had any offenses to this? Not that I'm aware of.
I thought there was, and I can't remember the exact incident. But there must be a reason for it, because the charter wants it. And it'd be a way,
well, and when the chair is elected through the charter process, there are roles and responsibilities for the chair that are unique.
I think they're unique today. We are supposed to be adopting those things. Does it actually say after all five councillors are placed?
What it says is the council member nominated and elected countywide shall be the chair of the council.
Yeah.
That can't occur under the current process because each of the commissioners were nominated district-wide but elected countywide. So because you're not nominated and elected countywide, you can't be, by definition, can't be a chair for the purposes
countywide,
of the charter.
Yeah.
And that won't occur until you have this next election. Once that happens, then yes, we will have a charter or a chair in place.
The nomination is the minority action of what we're talking about.
The actual action is the
general election.
Well, the charter speaks to those being conjunctive. It requires an and. And so I think you have to satisfy both of them, regardless of whether one is more important than the other in the board's view.
So can we take action today and change that?
I think your rules of procedure require that the amendment be written up, distributed to each of the board members 5 days before it's voted on.
Okay. But if we take that action, that actually changes the charter.
No, it doesn't. It just adopts your own rules of procedure in which you say how you're going
to
do business from here
until
the end of
the year.
Okay.
It doesn't implement.
So is that what you want Chris to do?
Yes. If I could get some kind of a consensus.
Do we have a consensus?
I have a little problem waiting until December 31st and say, okay, now it's different. I think it'd be good for us to practice now and adopt everything we possibly can from the charter rather than wait until the end of the year and say, okay, tomorrow, it's a different color.
So you want to make that in the form of a motion?
Okay, I'll make a motion that we ask you to draft up something for us, and give it to us 5 to 10 days after that. We'll bring it back to the board for consideration.
Okay. Is there a second? Okay. I'll second it. Any more discussion? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Any nays?
Nay.
Okay.
I don't see that it's necessary at all. And this whole notion gives me a really uncomfortable feeling.
Okay.
You don't like the charter?
So
no, you know it's not the charter. And you know exactly what it is.
It will be.
So that wraps up 1.3. You want to move to 1.4? That's yours, Tom.
1.4. Okay, that was what I started off on. And that was the gray area that the charter did not talk about. And that is the authorization given by the VOCC for the filling of vacated positions or the creation of new positions.
And I take it the way you're looking at me that that's a question for me. Actually, I think the charter does speak to it. I think that it depends on the particular position that the vacancy involves. As I've indicated to the board before, I think that there's a difference in how vacancies may be reviewed for the purposes of departments for which the board is ultimately, that the county manager is required to administer but ultimately come under the board, and those that are under independently elected officials. Under 3.4 of the charter, it makes it clear that other administrative departments, other elected officials, shall appoint all officers and employees. I think you cannot impose a vacancy review process for employees of other elected officials. Once you've budgeted those positions, I think they have a right to fill those positions. And in fact, I think I've even provided you with a case that says that. So I think it's not I think the charter does speak to that, and the charter makes it clear it's creating two departments, executive and legislative. It goes on to say the executive departments are made up of the county manager and the other elected officials. And then it goes on to say the other elected officials shall appoint all officers and employees of their respective elective executive offices.
Okay, and Chris, I agree with that part.
Okay.
But you're after what I'm asking for. I'm asking for that we authorize that appointment to take place.
I don't think.
And the reason why, because we're in charge of budget.
That you
and
set the budget.
It's a quasi of control of the budget. So, and I guess I go back and I look at. I'm aware that we have several vacancy positions that are not filled, and there's a reason why those are not filled, and it was the desire of the previous board under the commission that we balanced our budget that way and paid our bills.
And I think the board has, I don't even think you have quasi power, you have absolute power when it comes to controlling the budget.
Mm-hmm.
But once you've set that budget, unless you do a budget resolution changing the budget, that you can't alter or condition or regulate elected officials and their filling of appointments.
Can I insert something here? Chris, the power of the purse is given to the legislative branch.
Yes.
It is our, not only our freedom, but our responsibility to ensure that the budget oversight and authorization is, that we do our due diligence. So what I would propose as a way to accomplish, I think, what would provide the necessary checks and balances would be to define come up with a budget resolution that defines the budget practice and policy to include the BOCC authorization of FTEs by classification.
Okay.
Right now it's just simply the total number of FTEs, which has worked fine in the past when we had a vacancy reviews process, but it's very, very general right now. And this would provide more checks and balances to ensure that each of those FTE classification positions are more specific and helps to fill that void that has become from general to very specific.
I think the board has the authority to make your budget as specific as you want, right on down to a line item budget for each and every department and each and every position. The only thing the board can't do is you can't, by amendment, take action that's inconsistent with the charter. So what a court will do if they have to look at this is if it comes down to whether you include some restriction within the budget that a court takes as a regulation of the elected officials administering the budget, then you will have a problem. But if all it is making it specific, then I think you have that authority.
Which is all I'm suggesting, is that we make it specific.
So along that line, at one time we discussed that budget related, that as policymakers, we set the range of position. We set the truck driver's ranges from here to here. I always understood that we were supposed to be setting that. Is that right?
Well, I'll go back and the charter talks about your role in connection with general policies. It says under 2.4B, establish compensation for all county employees and provide for reimbursement of expenses is one of your powers.
Yeah, and past practice and current practice is that if we, for example, the associate medical examiner position that the board approved, I couldn't do that. I had to bring that to the board,
sure.
And we had to recommend a range and a classification, job
because
description.
Because it was a new position.
Because it's a new classification and a new position.
Yeah.
So the board has absolute control over that. You also set parameters for union negotiations and the general pay and compensation scheme for the county.
I have to step out for 1 minute.
Okay. So I think you have generalized powers over over the salaries of county employees and the reimbursement of expenses.
So, yes. And so is that what I'm talking about? We set the range of that job classification. Is that what you just said?
Well, that's not what the charter says. I mean, it's more general than that, whether that's included within that. The only reason I'm cautious about answering your question is there's mm-hmm. a balance of authority, some of which is given to the county manager and some of which is given to you. Mm-hmm. And I want to be careful to make sure I don't blur those. I prefer to provide you something in writing rather than try and just go from my memory.
That conversation came up before, and that's when I brought it back when we're trying to, from what he said.
Because this is a different question than you're taking on.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was somewhat connected.
Well,
as far
it's related,
as far as salary.
But they're different.
Yeah.
So I'd like to, when you read the portion of the charter that outlines the county manager's direct responsibility.
Well, the county manager, there are a number of those, but do you mean as it relates to appointments or generally?
Hiring.
The county manager is under 3.3, and it says the county manager shall appoint chief officers on the basis of their ability, qualifications, integrity, and experience concerning the duties of the office to which they are appointed, and then later on, other administrative departments, the chief officer of each that he appoints shall appoint all officers and employees of their department. So it's a two-step process, but they're all executive positions and executive responsibilities. And then it goes on in 3.6 to talk about the other elected officials, and that's the section I started out discussing, where elected officials are given the power to appoint all officers, employees of their respective elective executive offices.
And Chris, I thought there was a more general portion of the charter that talked about the duties and responsibilities in general for the manager.
Oh, there is. I'm sorry. That's why we asked you whether or not you wanted them specifically or only with regard to appointments.
It seemed to me that there is a general statement about his authority over personnel.
He is obligated to supervise all administrative departments established by the charter or created by council. He's charged with executing and enforcing all ordinances, presenting to council the annual statement, preparing the budget, presenting to the Planning Commission the comp plan, determining the organizational structure of and assigned duties to administrative departments which are not specifically assigned by the charter or ordinance, and then a number of others, three or four other duties. But those are all dealt with in 3.2B.
Yeah, there is a general section about human resources, Article 5.
Right, and that's the other one that I want to compare.
It says the county manager shall develop, implement, and administer human resource policies for administrative departments and other offices subject to those policies. Human resource policies requiring council approval are presented in Article 5, Section 5.2. Council approval is not required for other human resource policies. So Section 5.2 lists four specific areas where the council has authority. Overall compensation policies, including but not limited to base pay, incentive, and premium compensation. Overall design of merit pay and step increases. Overall design of benefits and eligibility. And overall design of insurance benefit plan eligibility and employee contributions.
But it doesn't say that our authority is for, and I understand the indirect effect on budget of hiring, but it doesn't. Anywhere does it say it is our authority to approve his hiring?
No.
Was that the board thing? That was your department.
No, council authorities.
So go back and see if you can find it under counselor's responsibilities, because we still haven't addressed what
there
I'm
might
asking.
Might be a conflict there.
Well, a council's authority is contained in 2.4. Would you, I'm glad to go through this right now. Yeah. Do you want me to prepare something in writing that makes it maybe a little bit?
I want to be real clear on what I'm asking. I'm not wanting to appoint or hire. I want the authority to authorize filling the position. And so far, we have not found that. But that was a previous policy of this board.
And Tom, if I can advance something here, what changed with the charter was authority to oversee the vacancy filling process, to be able to put checks and balances. Some of those went away.
Uh-huh.
And so that created a void and a vacancy, and the interest of the people when it comes to the budget has been that's been reduced. And so the best way I know to fill that void and to restore some checks and balances doesn't have to do with policy of hiring and firing or filling vacancies. It really has to do with just simply being the power of the purse, the specifications of the budget. And if we create a definition that says that our budget authority and responsibility is defined by this employee by classification, then that gives the specifics that we need to ensure that we're always tuned in. And Mark, if you want to be able or if any of the staff or electeds want to be able to change those from one FTE classification to another, or create or remove those, then it would provide a means for us to be able to. It automatically requires eyes on the task, and it provides that oversight, the checks and balances. So certainly there are other kinds of things that when it comes to implementation of the charter that can be done and maybe should be done. But this is one very specific focused area that would move us in the direction of due diligence, power of the purse, financial oversight, accountability, transparency, and it just simply is three words, FTE by classification, and that's a budget policy.
Just to make sure I'm clear, are you suggesting that every one of the 1,650 positions that are currently budgeted, you would like the board to review and validate every one of those? Or
no. It means that we would, there's a transition that needs to happen. Let's skip to the process where that transition is already done. And then is that we have a budget that's already adopted, that's very specific and line itemed, that defines all of those positions, authorizes them all. The transition, so that's what we're after.
Okay.
And the question is, how do you get there? What's the transition? Do we have to sign up and authorize every single one between now and then? I don't think so.
No, but you would have all 1,650. You would know exactly what each one is.
Yeah.
And then that would be frozen by the appropriation that you would approve in December.
Mm-hmm.
And that any change to any one of those would have to come to the board.
And you change one of those, you would propose them, or the electeds would propose them, and we would, we would consider that as a team.
But then if any one of those went vacant, then I'd be free to review and approve.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's different than what I'm saying.
It is different, but it moves us in the direction of specifications. It just simply, something went away, and this puts something back in its place for accountability.
We did that in part of what we did. So when it was brought to us, the vacancy position, on that vacancy piece of paper was the supervisor's part that he filled in, that he would say, this job is used for blanky blank, and John Smith left. The scale of this project is such and such. And if this position was not filled right away, we would be in trouble work-wise because it's during construction period and we need this truck driver now. That was all inclusive. That was inclusive. So what you're saying and what the charter says is that we do we are in charge of those range of positions, the range of each position. You read that.
Well, I said that the charter. I didn't go as far as you just said, and I told you I wouldn't go. I couldn't go that far without reviewing it. Because the charter had assigned obligations to the county manager.
And the reading
it does say that you have the authority to, and this is the wording again, establish compensation for all county employees and provide for reimbursement of expenses. And then later on it goes on in 5.2 to talk about the policies that are part of the HR policies that you have a role in. Overall compensation including base pay, incentive, and premium. Merit pay and step increases, overall design of benefits and eligibility, and design of insurance benefit plans, eligibility, and employee contributions.
I think we're saying the same thing.
Okay, they may be. I'm just telling you.
It doesn't talk about specific pay ranges by classification or what to classify a particular job.
And many times when someone would bring us a job, another elected official, he would come back and he says it's based on what the blessing of the board to alter his budget because he would say, I don't want to replace this manager position. I want to replace it with two working bees, for example, under current budget, and we would authorize that.
So I want to ask.
We did not hire or appoint, and that's what I think the charter refers to.
So. It sounds like there used to be a system that either job postings for new positions or replacements or vacancies or whatever would come to the council for some kind of a purview. And then for a while that didn't happen. And now I see it's happening again. You showed me a list last week because there were quite a number of positions. Some of those were treasurer, some of those were sheriff. Half or more were other elected officials who already had those amounts approved in their budget, and then we approved the overall budget. So this specifically, 1.4, says filling of vacancies. So tell me what causes a vacancy. What would you, so somebody retires?
A number of causes. I think I provided a list to the board of the actual vacancies that were created in 2014 and through May of 2015.
Yeah.
We had people who passed away.
Okay.
We had people who failed to pass their probation period.
Okay.
We had a number of folks who failed to achieve educational attainments that were required of their hiring arrangement.
Okay.
We had let go for misconduct.
Okay.
We had normal retirements. We had people who left for medical.
Okay.
We had people who left for other jobs. Probably 12 to 15 different categories.
Okay.
That cause a vacancy. And we have internal promotions and transfers.
So it's like whatever can happen to the general population
can
happen to our employees. Okay. So there are lots of different reasons why a position needs to be refilled. You did talk about, which I thought was very prudent, if there were department heads that had vacancies that had occurred for maybe a biennium or whatever, or for a year or longer and hadn't been filled, that you would review those to see if that job is still needed, if that placeholder is
correct.
Still needed. I have the impression that we're trying to add too much cure. And like templating the jobs, that seems like a lot of detail to me. That seems like a lot of detail, but
it would be. I'm sorry.
So And I understand on the budget side that the fear that if we, let's just say, we had runaway hiring, there's a big impact to the budget that would creep up on us, and then we'd be stuck in some position to remedy that. We would be asked to do something that maybe we would not want to do. And we don't want to find ourselves in that position.
Well, let me just make this point. If every position was filled every hour of the year, 2,080 hours, we have the budget capacity to pay every one of those hours. But that condition never exists because we always have people who leave for a variety of reasons, and it takes time to replace them.
Right.
So what you have is it's called hire lag. Then hire lag creates salary savings. Mm-hmm. And we always have a substantial amount of salary savings every year. And we can carry those forward. We can add them to fund balance. We can use them for one-time requirements like a defunct phone system that needs to be replaced or what have you. We bring those options to the board. The board decides what to do with that available fund balance. I think the suggestion that Councilor Medor is making, the detail required to create that FTE by classification exists. It's in our database. HR has it in position control. Adriana has it in her budget system. So that could be produced, and we could produce that and make it part of the budget resolution when we do our readopt in December. And then once you approve that readopted budget, then I would be constrained by position and classification.
Aren't you restrained now by fiscal responsibility?
I cannot add FTE. I cannot jack a position up from one classification to another without the board's approval. So, yeah, there are significant controls over manpower in this county.
There already are, you're saying.
Right. Now, I know the board's very concerned about, there are no tax increase policy, and they always want to have those salary savings because it's a cushion. It adds to our security. We have a fund balance policy, and those salary savings help us achieve that policy. And, when we refunded our bonds, Moody's gave us I think it was a AA-plus rating. So we're doing a very fine job of managing our resources, and managing the people part of it is an important aspect of that.
Mm-hmm. And you understand that.
I do.
So
I think the charter would be most accurately implemented by what Councilor Medor is suggesting, that the board says, here's your budget, it's tight, it's specific, here, Mark, go manage it.
Mm-hmm. And you'd find that manageable?
It would be much simpler than coming to each of you and saying, can I hire this
here? I would never recommend that. Because you could get three different opinions on a yes or no answer.
Soon to be five.
So, my preference, really, I'm not disagreeing with doing the templating. And if Mark agrees that could be a very effective control on the elected side, I'm hearing that.
Now, if you tell me how many paper clips and how many pens and reams of paper I can buy, then I think I'll fight that tooth and nail.
Which leads into part two of what I am going to say here, which is an assessment of the county manager's performance is where I would rather deal with something like this, where, if we saw something going on that we think is going to alter the budget and you don't correct it, that we have a discussion with you about that.
A discussion I never want to have.
So that's a discussion
And we wouldn't want that either. But, if that sounds agreeable to you, I don't quite understand it, but if there is a systematic way to do that, I wouldn't object to that. As long as you would find it workable and it does not defy the charter, because the charter's law, and so.
So, on the scenario that you bring forward, you're assuming that I know every position in every department. Or it shall be brought to us whenever, for whatever reason, to review. So it's not, I don't need to know how many people in every department.
Well, this would be similar to what we do for equipment. Our Scott Rood, our fleet manager, he provides the board when the budget resolution is prepared in December. He provides an equipment list for the board. Here's all the equipment we have scheduled to buy next year. Well, he doesn't come back to you and say, can I buy this? Can I buy that? You've given him the authority to make those purchases when you approve the budget. And so he's off to the races. And I'd like to be off to the races with him regarding personnel.
That's not necessarily true. Because I remember when they brought to us the replacement of the pup traders. A pup trader is what goes on the back of a dump truck. And we had two-axle pup traders. And he wanted to buy three-axle pup traders. Carried the same amount. We were in financial bind at the time. And for whatever reason, it was brought back to this board before he made that purchase.
Because he wanted to buy three, and you had only authorized him in the budget to buy two.
Well, he actually was bringing a lesser amount.
Right.
And then during conversation, he brought
now,
the rest of it.
Counselor, if I were to pull up the grid, and if I were to look at the consent agenda from now until January 1st, you will not find one piece of equipment on there that Scott Rood asked for permission to buy that was also on the list in December.
From now going backward?
You rarely ever see equipment purchases on the consent agenda because you approved those in December when you approved the budget.
We rarely.
Now, if there's a change, I remember when I was in general services, I wanted to buy a boom lift because we were renting one at great expense. Every time we have to replace a light bulb in the parking garage or in the parking lot, we got to rent a boom lift. Owning our own, we save quite a bit of rental expense, and we'll keep the thing for 25 years. I had to bring that to the board. And
why?
Because it wasn't on the schedule.
It wasn't a part of the schedule.
It was under current budget.
No, it wasn't.
He's using his rental money to make the payment.
But it was a capital acquisition, and the board has to approve capital acquisitions.
Right.
So I'm just asking for the same freedom that Scott Rood
conversation. The other thing we brought back that's unusual was last week we brought the appointment of filling two new positions to the consent agenda.
Well, we
had never done that.
Councilor Mielke, in preparation for that comment, I found a staff report that you signed as the board chair adding a couple of positions during a consent hearing. So we have done it not frequently, but we...
As a normal practice.
But we do it on a fairly regular basis.
So what you're proposing doesn't get to where we control, because I don't know how many people you have in your office and wouldn't give me any benefit to it. But I would like to know how many people you're rotating in your office, what positions they came from, and whether or not we still need the position. That's the purpose of reviewing the authorization to hire.
If I have it right now in the budget, the budget details exactly how many full-time equivalent employees are in each department and division.
We're not arguing the same thing.
But I'm just trying to get to, I think what okay. Counselor, I want to understand it so I can help Mark. It also details the program expenditures for each area. So, you know, departments have multiple programs. But it doesn't go into this, and so it actually budgets the number out for the cost of the program, but it doesn't articulate line by line how many employees or FTEs each program has. And I think what I hear you saying, Mark, is you could build that
easily
into the programs.
Easily.
So, for instance, jail administration, $600,000, but it has X amount of FTEs.
Yeah. We are already authorizing the budget every year and every readopt and every amendment. This just provides more detail. It already exists. It presents it. It makes it specific. So it doesn't address the vacancy review. It's a different thing. I understand that. And it doesn't substitute for it. But it does move us in the direction of
information I don't need.
Well,
if I wanted, I would have requested it already.
well, the transparency that it brings, the visibility, the open government that it provides, provides each of us with that ability to be. I know I'm very interested in it. I want to be able to see that, because when I go back to Fairway Village and I talk with Grandma, I want to be able to tell with her, I'm keeping my finger on the pulse, and I know to the level of detail that we're fast and efficient, and we're smart, and we're keeping an eye on our expenses, so that our team is equipped with everything they need. And I know firsthand that our county manager is not a big spender. He knows how to get things done in a way that you'd be proud of. And this provides the level of detail, at least that I need, in order to honestly report that. So, can I ask that, Chris, we prepare a document that would provide that level of detail for us for budget oversight and authorization?
Yes, I can prepare a resolution. I'll work with Bob, or with
Adriana.
Mr. Stevens and Adriana.
Okay. That information is already available. All you have to ask staff for it, they'll give it to you.
Well, we have the total FTEs, but it's all lumped into one big number. We don't have the details.
So what I would want to be sure of in this process is that this document, once we get it, is not going to be used to usurp the county manager's managerial authority. Because implementation of the charter, to me, is a harmony, a balance between the legislative side and the administrative side. So right now I'm not hearing that usurps your authority. I think how we use that is going to have to be wise judgment. We cannot tie, we can't hire a manager and then tie their hands so they can't do their job and to second guess them. So I just want to make sure that's not where we're going. And a reclassification alone shouldn't do that. Or a classification alone. It still sounds to me like too much information and data that would be kind of overwhelming, and I'm not sure I would find it useful. I'd rather just see the list that you showed me the other day, and if I have a question, I can say, what's this?
HR actually dispatches a countywide email every week. It shows here are all the opportunities that exist in the county, and
opening.
That's for our own internal people, so they know what opportunities exist.
Yeah.
So that information is already easily available. But what I hear Council Madore saying, I don't know whether it's Bach or Mozart, but it's music to my ears. Bless it in December, and then county manager implements it.
As long as you stay within the same FTE classification.
Correct.
It's not at all what I started off asking for.
I know, but
it's related.
The conversation evolved.
It's related, and it's easier to understand. And everything's in place. The department's already in place. It's already working in harmony. We're looking at any possible changes that might occur in that department. I don't want to know about the department out there already working. That's not my job. That's your job.
But in the past, the vacancy review process was used by the board to question job classifications, to question the department director, their judgment and executing their program, and hiring actions were delayed. And it was an administrative burden on them as well. And like I said, I think in a previous meeting, 120 of those came to the board, and one of them was held off for 3 months. 119 of them were blessed pretty much like this. So we're making people do all these fancy justifications when the approval rate was 99.962%. So to me, that's the definition of make work. And I don't like make work, neither does the board, I believe.
Don't you have a board already, a hiring board? Or
we had a vacancy review group.
Vacancy review.
So Leslie Harrington had to email it to every one of the members of that board, and then they would come back.
I'm not asking for that.
Well, I'm not.
So that's the part that you talked about burdensome. That's the part I'd cut out.
Well,
but what I would, what I told you before, I want a pulse. I want to know why the people are leaving. Where are they going?
Sir,
you
don't have to convince me. You have to convince these
many
two.
Many times that manager, supervisor, or director would come up here and said, I want to reclassify this job. I either want to upgrade it or downgrade it, one or the other, and then we would know what was going on in that department. But as is now, it's like I've got 24 openings on a weekly basis that I've never seen before in 6 years.
We had 120 vacancies last year. Through May of this year, we have 55. We're on track to have about as many vacancies this year as we had last year. So we're not seeing higher turnover. Turnover's been roughly constant for the last 3.5 years. And I think I showed you a turnover percentage chart that showed that.
So you don't want to do this because it's burdensome?
I don't mind sitting with you and showing you a list. And I gave you the list and heard nothing from you, so I presume you were...
Told you that's not what I wanted. That's what they wanted. Go give it to them.
Well, can I say something here? I think it sounds like Commissioner Stewart and I have each taken a one-on-one time and walked through each one of these positions with you. And we can have a formal process, try to come up with a formal process, and that may be kind of pushing the limit. But there's... better than that, really, is just simply good one-on-one communication. An informed board is a happy board, where we understand that we're a team, and we're on the same wavelength.
It sounds like the ground rules just changed. You proposed a detailed budget with FTE by classification, and then give that to me and turn me loose. Now you just said I have to sit down one-on-one and go over the list every week. In addition to that,
no, I didn't want to say that.
Okay, I'm
saying
sorry.
That the
my fear is
right now we don't have the FTE by classification.
Yeah.
And so we don't have anything that kind of fills that gap.
Okay.
So what we've done is we've informally filled the gap by sitting down with you and say, walk me through this. Help me understand.
Okay.
And so between now and then, that conversation should continue so that we know we're on the same wavelength until we have visibility.
Okay. So throughout the rest of 2015, we continue with the list and the one-on-one reviews. And then if we do in the readopt this FTE by classification, then those one-on-one reviews in 2016 disappear because you now have a budget that's specific and much tighter.
Well, as for the timing of when we adopt this,
I'm running over to Adriana the minute we're done here.
Yeah, in other words,
say, can you do this
if it's
next time
idea,
we do a budget?
And if it turns, helps turn on the lights, the soonest reasonable time we can do it, the better. So I wouldn't necessarily assume it's going to be at the end of the year. If we can do it sooner because it's simpler, then by all means, everybody would be helpful.
Well, I hope Adriana doesn't interpret your last comment doubting her capability to get it done, because
if there's any person I don't that I don't doubt capability, it's Adriana.
Okay,
the
good.
Budget office,
very good.
Amazing.
I don't think we have agreement with that.
Let me just put it this way, Tom. It's not a substitute from what you're asking for. You asked for something else. This is an additional tool related to it, but it's not. It sounds like it would be whatever it is between now and whatever we do when we adopt something, the one-on-one communication, there's no substitute for that. It would be really good for you and Mark to be able to sit down and say, okay, help me understand here that list so that you're on the same wavelength.
So I
know it helped me a great deal.
I think Councillor Mielke wants the full sheet, the justification, the 3-4 paragraph document.
Yeah, I'd like to know why the foreman, like, what to fill the position.
Mark?
Yes.
Mr. McCauley? You and I sat down with that list. We went down that list. These are auditor's office, these are sheriff's office, these are whatever. My question, is it in their existing budget?
Yes.
It's was in their existing budget,
yes.
then I'm not interested in it. Is there anything on this list that's not in existing budget? The answer was no. I believe we were done with that list then,
yes.
because we approved those budgets. And so
it took about
if
3 minutes.
Not outside
yeah.
what is already known. Now, one of the things that Tom says that is a point he hasn't made today, but he's made it in the past on this issue, is trying to understand if it's a vacancy, do we have employees leaving? And when they leave our service, why are they leaving? That kind of helps us keep on the pulse mm-hmm. of morale and market for wages and salary and so on and so forth. That gives us other kinds of information. Knowing that they've gone to another job locally
right.
can give us a lot of indication
yep.
that they're still in the workforce and there's some reason that they're going. So to come back to what you're saying, though, I understood what you reiterated, that for now until the end of the year or until this gets put through, we will be looking at a list of people that are leaving. And if we know why they're leaving, I think it's important for us to know how our personnel feels. And I know that we did some kind of a survey or something that was 2 years ago.
Spring of 2014.
$80,000 to do the survey.
Spring of 2014. Yeah, I don't think I have a copy of that. I'd be interested. Did you give me a copy of that?
I don't know whether I did. There was a substantial amount of paper associated with that. I'll make sure.
Well, maybe there's a synopsis.
Christina Monks, I'll have her
okay,
do,
that'd
a,
be
do
great,
a document dump.
I'd be interested. So if you're making a motion, I'm ready to go on it.
Okay. I move that Chris Horn prepares a document that would define FTE by classification, budget authority. Is there a second?
Should we address hiring authority that's made possible as a result of?
It's your motion. I'm just responding.
Well, I want to know if there's a caveat here or something we need to add. So what's the concern?
Purpose of specifying the budget FTE by classification
yeah.
is to give greater visibility to the board on manpower resources that the county has at its disposal and to increase transparency to our citizens. And that will result in the county manager's freedom to hire without prior board.
Yes.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Prior board.
Yeah.
I don't know what the right word is there. Authority, approval, or whatever.
Unless,
or consultation.
There's an unless, and that is unless you seek to change the job classification. If you change
yeah.
the classification up or down, then it would have to come back to the board for approval.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because all that's being approved is FTE by classification.
Right.
So, but with that exception, then I believe the resolution that I understand being discussed would include that authority.
That wouldn't give me anything that I was seeking for information. And it would appear that I would micromanage some other elected officials. Office or even one of our own directors, I would micromanage what I thought, how many people he would have or should have. I don't need that information. It's already being managed by you and the director. And it's also after the fact. After you do it, I don't want to be unhappy with you. I'd like to work it out so that when we move forward with it, and we were in agreement. I don't want to come down into the end of the year and say, hey, it just didn't work out, Mark. I didn't know what was going on.
Tom, what three things would you want to know Are there two or three things you'd want
just
to know?
Just awareness. You mentioned one. Why are they leaving? What was the class leaving? Does the job have to be filled right now? Who left? And what the range is? And a lot of times, it was one piece of paper, one short paragraph from the supervisor or manager just said, I need this position filled right away. We're in construction season. So
if they said it doesn't need to be filled right away, would you discourage the hiring?
Absolutely.
Well, see, that's the part where I think we get into the territory that
he recommended not be filled right away. The supervisor recommended it not be filled right away.
But the vacancy requests only came to the board at the point where the manager wanted to do the hiring.
Exactly.
So if he didn't need the position for 3 months, he wouldn't submit the vacancy review at the beginning. He would wait until the point where he needed to hire.
No, that wasn't the point, because we wanted to be involved in that part of it too. When the vacancy occurred, we want to know about it. In fact, in many cases, we'd like to know about it when the guy gave notice. And then in the paragraph, he would say, this job does not need to be filled for 3 to 4 months, or this job needs to be filled right away.
There's another category of vacancy that wasn't listed there, and that is that in various areas throughout our staff, there have been long-term vacancies. Some of those vacancies have been vacant for years. And there is nothing right now that puts any kind of visibility that says all of a sudden we're filling a bunch of those vacancies. The budget authorizes the maximum number of FTEs right now.
Yes, understood.
But we have budget turnback, which amounts to millions of dollars each year, which underspends the budget because some of these FTEs aren't needed, but they're authorized. Just to give you a contrast, some departments, like Peter Van Noordwijk, over the last several years has turned back $1 million or around $1 million, and he's actually done much better job than it's ever traditionally been done. That in contrast to some departments that no matter how much you give them, they find a way to spend every dollar. This allows, it doesn't require that we micromanage, but it does provide the level of scrutiny and detail available to us to recognize those opportunities.
So if someone inflates their budget with positions they don't intend to fill, and then they turn that money back in, they're a hero because they're turning money back? I don't get that.
Well, that's part of the issue. And you know, Adriana came to one-on-ones and briefed you on her program inventory that she's doing with all of our electeds and our department directors. And eventually that will lead to performance measures by program area and that sort of thing. As part of that process, the FTEs will be reviewed.
Yes.
And any stale positions,
yes.
We're looking to take them off the table.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I give you $10 and you only need 7 and you give me 3 back at the end of the budget period, and it's like, oh, hey, nice job, and I give this person 7 because they only asked for 7 and they spend 7, it doesn't make them a bad manager.
Mm-hmm. Makes them an accurate manager.
Yeah, I mean, if you go to a university that gives everybody A's and you got a 4.0, what's that mean? Doesn't mean much at all. So,
okay, so that motion was on the table. Is there a second?
I'm going to second it. I don't think what we're asking to do with that, I'm willing to try that.
Okay.
I'm not convinced that that is going to be a useful tool for us, nor am I convinced it will give us any built-in safeguards against what we might be fearful would be excess personnel cost spending that we're not aware of. But if Mr. McCauley is comfortable with that, and if you think that might be a helpful tool, I'm willing to look at it. What I did see in the budget here, though, it shows by every department the total number of FTEs approved, and then by role or function what their budget is by year. And that is a useful tool. And that does give FTEs that are approved and the cost of those FTEs.
But I think so, the detail that Councilor Madora is looking for is how many engineer ones do we have in public works?
It would break out.
How many engineer twos? How many engineer threes?
And I'm sure I don't care how many engineers of whatever classification there are. However, it can make a difference in budgeting if
right.
they're filled. So
right, but looking at that, you would expect...
But if a component could be added to the budget, that... I'm wondering if actually in a budget document a section could be added for that kind of detail.
Certainly.
Although a two-year book might... we'd have to think about the flexibility. We'd have to... This isn't a simple question or a simple answer. We can try what you're suggesting.
Okay.
So I second that motion.
Okay. So any more discussion?
I think it's going to be a whole bunch of more paper that's going to tell us something after the fact. It won't prevent us from making mistakes. And the next best thing, what you're saying, is that would include a flow chart. If that's what you're looking for. So if you're looking at, if I'm looking for a manager, and one of the things we came across here, we have people based or titled as a manager, and they don't manage any people. That brings red flags up with me, or I have a manager managing three people or two people. Those are red flags for me. And that would only be seen in a flow chart. I would never see it on what you're asking for.
Is that true, Mike?
I don't understand what was just said.
Were you listening?
I was.
Okay, I'll
Can
try
I
again.
Paraphrase? Can I paraphrase?
Yeah, okay.
So
I'll tell you
an organizational chart covering every single position in the county?
No, every department. Each department would have their own flow chart.
Okay, I think we have
visibility would be there in the FTE by classification that it would, because it would show this person is a manager managing two people, those persons are managers managing those people, and that last manager is managing one person. They would all be different levels of managers, and that would be clearly presented in the budget by classification. You can see all those different levels.
There might be a reason
or at least
to
it would help
one
to
manager
that.
Well,
and
that's,
three
that's
employees.
That's exactly right.
Right.
So we'll be...
Yeah.
I call for the question.
Okay. All in... that means we need a vote. Okay, I'll second that motion. That's non-debatable. Motion passes.
You made the motion. She seconded.
So all in favor of the original motion?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Motion passes. Thank you very much. We can move on to the next thing.
What motion was that? Was that the flowchart motion?
No, it was not the flowchart motion. You're going to go talk to Adriana about
classification. I was just trying to interpret what was being said there.
So is 1.3 and 1.4, are we done with those?
Yes. Okay. Now.
Okay. Next week you don't get to put anything on the agenda.
Okay. You can't make him stop it.
I never got anything I had on.
Thank you,
Chris. It's your group.
Okay.
Thank you.
Let's move back to 1.1, which is just simply the approval of the minutes. I would like to handle them separately because I have two corrections to make to the original June 17 minutes. And so you want to handle the June 24 minutes first? Is there a motion to approve?
I move to approve June 24 minutes.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. June 24 minutes are approved. And on the June 17 minutes, rather than the formal process of putting it on the table and then make to amend, what I'll do is I'll just simply point out the specific additions of content that I would like people to see included. And the best way is just for me to pass that to you so you can take a glance at it and pass it to Tom.
Well, we need to read it into the record if you're making a
formal
proposal.
Oh, I will, but I want you to see, just make it easier for me to. This is in addition to that.
I would want a review of the tape.
Okay. That's what I'm. So why don't we do this? Why don't we? I'll pass these to Mark.
Can we just get a confirmation?
And bring them back next week.
And if we're looking for a verbatim portion, if that portion could be. If he wants a verbatim portion,
I'm not asking. None of our minutes have been verbatim. This is just basic.
These are called
content.
Action minutes.
Yeah.
Well, whatever they are, I would just want a confirmation. That's okay. What I'm asking for.
Yeah,
so we'll pass it back to you for clarification.
Yeah, I do recall the conversation. We were very careful to specify that it was for the visitor center and not the chamber.
Yes.
But the money flows through the chamber to the visitor center.
And I need to see that one back.
And I'll also, just for the recording here,
okay.
Find out what those are.
Yeah, given the nature of these changes, should we just bring these back next week?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, thank you very much.
Can I see that proposal again, the draft?
Okay, so that takes care of, we're going to bring June 17 back next week after that clarification to see if that content, and feel free to make the content most accurate in those areas. Okay, Mark?
Yes.
Okay, 1.2, code enforcement. Commissioner Stewart, that's you.
Yes, so I have not heard in a board time. Mr. Benton came in and said that he could have that code enforcement position in his department. I stated an objection to that, and I don't know where that code enforcement position is going to be directed.
My understanding that it is in Mr. Benton's office.
Okay, I can clear this up.
Go ahead.
The board said get on with it, so we did. Mm-hmm. The job description has been tweaked to remove references to building codes mm-hmm. and any certification for building inspections and that sort of thing. I did decide to put the position in Department of Environmental Services because of the extensive impact on the environment that the surface mining and gravel producing operations create. DES has worked with HR and they are hoping to get the position vacancy announcement out on the street by Friday. If not this Friday, definitely by next Friday. So after a short recruitment period, we'll monitor what kind of applications we get, decide whether we have sufficient qualified folks to proceed, and then hopefully 6 weeks, 8 weeks from now, we'll have somebody with a vehicle, and you'll see a staff report on the consent agenda next Tuesday to purchase a vehicle for the use of this new staff person.
Great.
Because the board has to approve capital items.
And
would we buy another one or assign them one out of the pool?
We're checking with Scott Rude to see if he has one available.
Thank you.
Well, I'm not worried about the car or the vehicle. I'm concerned about a couple things. When we initially talked about this position, we talked about the need for professional standards. Now it sounds to me like we've reduced those professional standards. And instead of looking at quarries and other conditional use, now we're talking about only quarries. That's not what our initial conversation about this position was going to be. So, there has been an assertion by some members of the public that the quarries get special consideration here. All the more reason to have this code enforcement position be by a person who's in as objective a department as possible. And to rewrite the standards and what we're going to use them for, that was never part of the conversation when we were going to add this person. So will this come to the commission for approval?
No, it's done.
It's done. So when we went outside of the original conversation that we had several times in board time, when we've gone outside of that, I would have wanted to hear about it. I would have wanted it to come back here, and I would have wanted to have a thorough discussion about it.
Well, Counselor, we brought it the first time with the first staff draft, and then it left for a week and came back. I think Councilor Madora did some work. Not a lot of changes. There was a few changes. One of the changes, I think, and we did discuss it in here, was the one on the certifications. Is that where that changed?
That was before our last board meeting where we discussed it.
Okay. Those qualifications...
What do you mean before the last board meeting?
It was...
Outside of a board meeting?
No, it's what we brought to the last board meeting where we had this on the topic.
Yeah.
And if I can recall correctly, we communicated our intent to fulfill... our obligation that we signed up for when we adopted the surface mining overlay, but it appeared that there were other, we want to make sure that that person isn't just simply looking and standing around waiting for only that work, but there's back burner things that are, and other things that can also be addressed, and we gave the freedom and the discretion, left it up to you, Mark, to define where you want to put that person and what kind of duties would be in addition to covering the fundamental need of the surface mining overlay conditional use permit enforcement.
Right.
Is that correct?
Right.
Yeah, so maybe we should just check in with the hiring manager on kind of where that position descriptions. I mean, I don't know if it's changed much, or maybe it has. I don't know.
Well, if you look at the conditions in the conditional use permits, there was nothing related to building code. It mostly had to do with dust control, covering your loads, how many trips per day, controlling the dust, the silt runoff into water bodies and things of that sort.
Operational stuff.
Yeah, which is all clean water related. And so, and we have code enforcement staff in public health, we have them in community development, we have them in the sheriff's office, we have them in the clean water program. We also have people in solid waste that do inspections of various commercial activities to ensure that they're complying with RCWs and so on. So code enforcement's not one unique activity or department in the county. It's a diffused effort. So I don't believe that we worked outside the guidance that we were given by the board. I thought we complied with it pretty strictly.
Julie Olson, you're welcome to join us on the table.
Oh, thank you. Okay.
So are we okay?
No, I'm not okay with this at all.
You missed that along the way. That's what we agreed on when we turned it over to him. We turned over to him and said, you move forward and place it where you think. And I remember the discussion that we said we weren't going to get into building permits or building inspections.
I understand that.
That must be the reason you took it out. And then that redefined where most of the inspection was going to happen. And that was environmental services. Do you have any place you thought it should go?
Yes, and we had that discussion. And I thought it should be in our usual code enforcement.
Which
and
one?
That there should be a specific person in that department that could do general code enforcement, but also would look at conditional use. Any major project that was approved and had conditional use permits, that they would go back through and they would look at that and make sure that those companies that got that special permission based on certain conditions were following those conditions. The other question was, do we have so many quarries that this person is going to be busy full-time, or should this person be able to look at other conditional use permits?
Yeah, and we've preliminarily looked through that. I think Susan sent up a list with about 300 projects in the county that had conditional uses. Now, of that 300, I went through them and just did my own little review, and certainly all 300 don't require someone paying attention to them, but probably 30 to 40 of them do.
Maybe 10% of
them. Yeah. And what we don't want to do is take
and some of them have already met their conditional use permit. Yeah. They have met the conditions.
And if
so, we can go based on complaint and work backward and look at those who maybe haven't met their conditional use.
Right. But what we don't want to do is knock on the door of someone who got a conditional use permit in 1990 and then rampage through their operation and find 16 violations and write them up.
Have I suggested that
no.
we do a rampage?
No.
Okay.
But I just know that that was a fear of at least one of the board members. And, you know, if a church got a conditional use permit a long time ago and we've got no complaints on it, then maybe we assume that they're okay. But if you have the
judgment, there's no substitute for rational judgment, and I'm always the first in that game.
I have complaints from our code inspectors going back and not responding to complaints. They take it upon themselves to reach out and pull up other things that were still in the queue as of the first of the year. They must feel a bit secure that they're under mark now or something. I'm not sure.
I think what we're...
I have a list of them.
That I think you made a point that kind of exaggerated a bit. The point is really that the code enforcement is not going to go out there looking for trouble.
Right.
We are complaint-driven. That's on one side of the equation. On the other side of the equation, we also have responsibilities for those ongoing conditional use permits that require us to continually inspect or periodically schedule inspections for some things like surface mining overlay requirements. So this addresses those.
Right.
Great.
Or number of trucks. Mm-hmm. There's supposed to be a limit. I understood.
Yeah.
That we might be in violation, or they might be in violation of.
So one of the first things this employee will do, I would imagine, is break the conditional use permits into categories. You know, severity of impact if conditions are violated. Maybe review the complaint file to see who's been complaining about what. But certainly, it's an 18-month to 24-month project position, and it'll be evaluated as we go along, and you will receive regular updates on their activities and what they've done, you know, meetings with constituents and so on.
Who will this person report to?
That's up to Director Benton. I don't know whether he'll report to...
Currently, the code enforcement and DES, I think, with Scott Melville's position.
Kevin Tyler, is it?
Well, I think they report to...
Clean Water.
What was Ron, Clean Water Program Director.
Yeah, and they've hired someone I have yet to meet.
Yeah, I don't know if they've made an announcement or not on that. So, typically, right now, as it stands, that this position, if it was with the other code enforcement position, would report to the Director of the Clean Water Program. Whether or not that changes, I guess we'll have to see what Mr. Benton does.
Any more discussion on that one?
No.
Okay. All right. We're done with 1.2 and 1.1, so we're moving on to councilor reports. Do you have anything, Commissioner Stewart?
No.
Tommy,
I have one I want to bring up again and remind my manager. On our one-on-one meetings, please reevaluate the people that were coming in to meet that we couldn't have that meeting with the other individuals or managers on issues that we couldn't discuss here at board time. We were all here at the same time instead of having one-on-one with someone from Public Works, for example, when the Public Works guy could come in here during board time and do a presentation.
Okay. Can you clarify that? I'm not sure if I'll try.
Well, for example, when we have our one-on-ones with Mark, normally my one-on-one would consist of going over and seeing if there's any problems with the consent agenda. But it has expanded it to we have one or two people, either from HR or we have someone from Public Works there with a different project or something that's happening that they're informing me of or asking me if it's okay for them to proceed. I would prefer that when they can, that they come to the board and present it to us all at one time instead of present it to each of us on our one-on-ones with Mark.
I think there are pros and cons on that.
Yeah.
On one hand, I had one of those meetings earlier this week, and I'm thinking, why is this one-on-one? But there was a PowerPoint that I got and made a lot of notes on and was able to ask questions and get through it in maybe 10 minutes, where I think when the whole board is here, we will reconfigure our meetings, and we should, so that we will have actual work sessions. I mean, we have them now, and we have them at different times, but where we're all together in one place, and the staff only has to go through it one time.
Yeah, I'm not talking about work sessions. I'm talking about smaller things that they vary from time to time, and that would be up to Mark to see can this be brought up at more time, or do we have to do it now? Sometimes it's a time frame element.
Yeah.
So
I will weigh in on that. To me, the one-on-one times work fabulous. We sit down with staff and we can walk through. We can have questions and answers, particularly areas of interest that we all may have a little bit different on all the different items on the agenda. And for to me, that would be not workable to bring that to board time, because at board time we're kind of deliberating. We're all waiting for each person's area of interest to be thoroughly vetted out. And so two of us and shortly four of us will be waiting for what one person's questions to get answered. Yes, it does take more staff time to serially talk to each board member, but it is more investment on their side. But to me, I wouldn't be able to get through my questions to the degree that I want to in the particular areas that I'm interested in anything but a one-on-one time. So it works really well for me. I prefer not to turn them into public meetings.
The point that I'm getting at is that I'm going to ask a question that you won't think to ask. Therefore, you won't be aware of maybe a positive thing or a negative thing on the issue at hand.
That's a good point.
The advantage of having three of us here, you or Jeannie could ask a question that I didn't think of that might be instrumental whether or not to accept or reject whatever plan is going on. Oh. But also, we should be operating as a board and not as individual points, because I've had cases in the last 6 years where I was told one thing because people knew where I would tweak, and they'd tell you something else because they knew how you tweaked.
Do you tweak?
I'm
something?
Harder to tweak than you are.
If I can offer this.
I think it depends. It depends on the presentation.
On the subject.
Yeah.
If it's a simple subject, I don't want to have a work session in here. If there's something that a department has to share with us, and there's a time frame that we do it individually, but you might have your work sessions individually too then.
Well, I see each item on the agenda consists of two steps. The first step is for us to have one-on-ones to make sure that we understand it, and at that point it may be that we find out that it's not ready, or there's extra information that can then be brought forward. That's the first step. The second step is when it finally comes to the agenda in our consent items, typically, or board hearings, now we have a public meeting where all three of us can deliberate and interview with staff at that time that is a very efficient process for me, because at that point, if you want to be able to ensure that we understand a concern of yours, you can ask that at that setting, and we can tune into it, and vice versa, because those are exceptions, and those are that BOCC meeting allows for those, provides for that very effectively. So I'm good with it like it is.
If you're referring to the consent agenda only,
or the public hearings,
that works out great. One-on-one, we have a better understanding. We can give our concerns, and if we can't answer those concerns, we mark it up to be discussed at the hearing. The other items, when someone walks in the door and says, "We're working on such and such a thing," or "We want to go forward with this such and such a thing," that can be presented here. It's not a discussion. It's like, I need something now. I'm trying to think of an example. What was it this week?
I was not here on Monday,
but
we had Matt Herman come talk about the TIP program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that'd be a good example. TIP program. They're working with stakeholders. They're working towards a work session, which I think is already on your calendar. But they're just doing a check in on a Monday with you guys to say, hey, this is kind of where we're headed. We've got a work session coming up. They're checking
that all
comfort level. I think.
Oliver
I think
was
Oliver
here.
Was probably.
Yeah, and then Gordy was here for the third one.
So typically, I think staff does try to aim towards bringing things that they're working on, going to bring to you in a public setting. They're just kind of checking in showing you the work.
Why wouldn't they do that here at the board time?
Well, in actuality, we are. Those exceptions where you feel like you want to be able to have us weigh in on something, you bring to board time. And then it may end up on the hearing on a consent later.
But there's some deep, complicated subjects that bringing... At least in my opinion, and you know, I can back off anytime you want. I just, you know, Councillor Stewart, you voiced concern on a number of occasions when you come to a meeting and you haven't had the materials provided in advance because you want to think about it, develop your questions, so you make that meeting more efficient. Otherwise, you're going, what is this?
And, exactly.
And then you have to ask questions after the fact.
So on the TIP, transportation impact fee, that brief review with a PowerPoint, so they were kind of laying out what the work session is going to look like,
right?
Because that's going to be a real important topic,
right?
And so it's like when you touch something two or three times,
yep.
You know, the first time you're getting the framework in your head, then that will result in a work session.
It's like stretching and warming up, and so when the race comes, you're ready to race.
Oh, that's a really good analogy.
That's what the work session is for. The work session is sit down and vent it out.
Well, so,
but you're frequently 45 minutes into an hour work session before full understanding is achieved.
Exactly, and then you just start getting your questions.
Yeah, and then you go, we have something at 10 o'clock, and then the work session has to be continued later, and so...
So I appreciated that approach on a complicated subject that affects the budget and affects development, and, you know, it kind of... For me, it kind of gave me a jump start to be thinking about that.
So for me, it was a TIP is back here again, and you have four districts. Well, I thought we asked for three districts. Well, no, we asked for one district, and so they reviewed whether or not we could have two districts or four districts, and then they compared the two. They didn't compare the three. The districts that they omitted were basically City of Vancouver. So when we had seven districts before, and now we have four, it means we didn't eliminate any districts at all. And the purpose of having fewer districts would be that when people pay a TIF fee, that the county has more flexibility to spend that money where it's needed, not to the small area that it was collected.
Well, I think there are rules and laws about
that's what we're doing. We're we're working within the state law to have fewer things to where it works better for the county. So when it came to me, I told them, first of all, I didn't like the four districts. I said, did you look at three? Oh, no, they didn't. And I informed them, in my opinion, they did not reduce the number of TIF districts because they just eliminated the cities who does their own now. And the fees were still too high. And they said, well, they have to go back. They have a formula of some sort. And I said, well, I'm not quite sure what formula you're using now, but the one we originated with, we just took from Seattle. No one knows why we do that, but we just tack a number on a certain number of trips. Wow. And then they have a book that tells them how many trips each household has. So
I had a different understanding of some of that.
Well, that's what the work session would come out. And then if it went from a work session to a consent agenda, you'd air your differences there.
And we'll have that opportunity to do that.
Yeah, but that was just one of them. If you're in disagreement, I'll use the examples in the future.
Okay. Anything else, Tom?
No.
Mark, anything?
No, not a thing.
Axel?
Good.
Peter? Mike? Okay. Motion to adjourn?
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
We're adjourned. Thank you.
Okay.